We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today. Good evening. Welcome to NUFC Matters, Super Mac and Gibbo on a Thursday. Good evening, chaps.
Hi.
Hi, boys. Hi, welcome.
Good to see you, lads. And as always, good to see everybody in the chat. Sorry we're slightly late. We had a little bit to discuss off screen. Nothing to do with the breaking news today, which sometimes Malcolm doesn't see the breaking news. And it's not good news. John, I'm sure will have seen it.
Is this on Tonali?
Yeah, I'm just going to read the statement from the FA. Sandro Tonali's been charged with misconduct in relation to alleged breaches of the FA's betting rules. It's alleged that the Newcastle United midfielder breached FA Rule E8 50 times by placing bets on football matches between August the 12th and October the 12th, 2023. Sandro Tonali has until the 5th of April, 2024 to respond. 12th of August, 2023 was the first day of the Premier League season, when Tonali made a goal-scoring debut for the Magpies against Aston Villa at Gallagher. And 12th of October 2023 was just short of a week before the news of Tonali's betting breaches in Italy broke and during an international break when several Euro 2024 qualifiers took place. But Italy weren't in action. The Italian midfielder, of course, is currently suspended from all forms of football until August the 27th this year, just under 2 weeks after the Premier League season kicks off. So it remains to be seen whether he'll serve a further ban for these subsequent rule breaches, with media reports on Thursday divided over that possibility. Right, John. Yeah. Oh, go on, Malcolm. You've got the bit between the two.
For me, because he hasn't as yet been charged, or this is the first charge by the English football authorities. And so that having this recent history over in Italy, they'll do him heavily. I'm sure of it.
Well, the word coming out of Newcastle, I mean, first and foremost, the thing to say is that having done all the betting that he did in Italy on all the games before he come to Newcastle, and bear in mind at this stage when he come to Newcastle, we didn't know of any of this, and the Italian FA hadn't announced anything of this, it would have been very naive of anybody to think that he was suddenly going to stop just because he was transferred to Newcastle. He was going to continue. It's addictive. It's his habit. It was inevitable that he was continuing that lifestyle and that he must have been doing it over here until he was charged by the Italian FA.
The thing is, though, John, that the Italians, I don't think, have informed Newcastle United of what was going on.
Well, that's in the past now.
I know it's in the past, but you would have thought that, you know, that we're all in the same business together, that they would have at least given a bit of a warning for Newcastle to prevent him from gambling.
Well, the situation is that it was quite, if you've got an addiction, if you like to have a drink, you don't just suddenly stop because you move house. And that's all Tonali did, was move house. So it was obvious. I'm not meaning this as an excuse or anything. What I'm meaning is that it was obvious that we were waiting with trepidation that he would have continued to be betting when he came here because that was a lifestyle. Now, and of course, that has been proved to be true. We don't know the details of it, like we've eventually got the details of the Italian FA, but the word coming out of Newcastle United, although, of course, we've got to wait and get confirmation from the FA and from the independent tribunal, but the word coming out from Newcastle United is that they are expecting the ban from the English FA, which is for 50 bets as opposed to whatever it was over in Italy in the 100 and odd it was for Ivan Toney when he was doing it, that it will be seen as an unbroken betting spree, i.e. a one-off that started in Italy and ended here. There wasn't a break in between and then he went back to it. And that therefore Newcastle United privately are very hopeful that any suspension will be shorter term, because of course it happened shorter term, and he's come clean in Italy and no doubt will come clean here, so that is always taken into consideration, and that the short ban will run concurrently with the ban that he's now on.
Right, so this is interesting that,
on the same day,
Dawson,
he'll still be finished and clear on the same day. So that, in fact, it will not impact on his return.
I mean, this is what Craig Hope's running with. And if that's the case, happy days. It's a sour start.
That's what I'm told as well, Steve, what Craig's you've put on screen.
Yeah, Craig Hope, the FA will treat Tonali's alleged breaches as one period of betting activity, Italy and England, meaning he's likely to avoid a ban being added to his current suspension, and any punishment will instead run concurrently.
That's just what I've said on screen. That's
great stuff.
Right, yeah.
Well, let's all get our prayer mats out, everybody who follows NUFC Matters, and pray that that happens.
Yes, it's interesting what you said, Steve, that it's one continuous long line of betting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's happened from the day he started in Italy all the way through to when he was found out and had become public and he started his rehabilitation.
Yeah, so looking at it from that point of view, it's reasonable to understand that that the sentence, any sentence he gets from the English FA, would run concurrently.
Because the ban that he's now under, given by the Italian FA, is worldwide, so it includes a ban in this country. So he's already banned in this country for 10 months because it's worldwide ban. So they're expecting, and this will clear it all up, of course, unless the boy was stupid enough to do the same thing again. And I don't think anybody would be that stupid, because his livelihood would then be on the line. And, of course, he's going through rehabilitation. He's having to go back to Italy about 12 times during the 10-month period of the ban to do rehabilitation out there and to talk to groups of young players and young people about the dangers of betting, etc., etc. So the rehabilitation is undergoing already. And, of course, he's still training with Newcastle, etc. But he's going back over there about a dozen times in the 10 months that he's back as part of the crime, if you like, for the want of a bad word.
Yeah.
But it's
given him plenty of time to learn the English language, isn't it?
Well, presumably that's what he's been doing in his afternoons, I hope.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, the hope we've got to have, guys, is that he comes back in the right, he's very strong willpower in mind, etc., and that he comes back in the way Ivan Toney's come back. Because Ivan Toney's come back and become an England player.
Yes, he has.
You know, so you've got to hope that Tonali comes back and is as strong-minded as Ivan Toney. Ivan Toney's very strong-minded, strong-willed, powerful, confident, won't let him get him down. He has come back very, very strong. And our hope, i.e. our being Newcastle United, the club we love and the club we support benefit, because he comes back as strongly as Ivan Toney, and he comes back with a belief that he owes the club something. Because I was suspicious before this come out, guys, when he was playing for us after his sensational start against Aston Villa. I thought he was very average. And I thought for a long time he looked as if he wished he wasn't here, that he was still playing football in Italy for his beloved AC Milan. It might just be that this will have cleared his mind and he'll say, hey, this club's been terrific to me. The fans have been terrific to me. They've been chanting my name at away games, etc., etc. The club have been terrific to me. I owe these people, this country, in this club, in these fans, an awful lot. And he comes back with a clearer state of mind and a determination to do well here. That's my hope.
Right. And just on this point that Chris Dawson has made, where he's talking of addiction as a disease, I understand what you're saying, but banned for having the disease? No. He's been banned, not for having it. He's been banned for placing bets on the industry that he's in. He would have been all right, horse racing, greyhound racing, or raindrops coming down a window.
Yeah.
He would have been fine on that. But because he's involved in football, you can't bet within your own industry.
I think he is currently receiving a huge amount of help. I think he sought help, but he's also had to accept help as part of his punishment in court.
That's right.
And therefore, you know, look at Ivan Toney. He's come back terrific. And
he has, hasn't he?
Everybody associated with Newcastle United has got to hope that this guy... The interesting thing, guys, if I can just throw it forward, you know, we've all seen Nottingham Forest get points deducted and Everton get points deducted, and I've wondered what's happened to Manchester City. And it may be because there's 100 charges and it takes so long. But you've got Tonali in the middle of a ban, and the guy that's going to play up here on Saturday, Pateka, is being currently looked at by our FA for betting illegally. In his case, hasn't even come up yet.
Bruno's mate
that's coming to play against us on Saturday afternoon.
Yes.
He's been investigated.
Yeah, and he looked good in the international recently.
Oh, he's a terrific player. I tell you what, he's a naughty little boy. He puts his foot in and commits fouls. In fact,
it wouldn't have surprised me if he got sent off.
Oh, he was very, very close to his second booking. He's a naughty, naughty little boy. He's a beautiful player, but naughty little boy. But then so is his best mate, you know. Bruno can be a bit naughty himself.
Any news on the injury situation, John, just while we're talking internationals? I'll come to Anthony Gordon in a minute. But no. I just want to know, have you heard anything about Dubravka? He was recalled from Slovakia, of course, and Lewis Miley were here, could have a back injury, and of course Bruno came back with trouble with his thigh.
Well, I mean, you know, it was so much in the dark. We don't even know about Livermento and Trippier, who missed our last game because of injury. What stage are they at towards coming back? What stages do Dubravka, what were the personal reasons? And I don't mean we should delve into something that mightn't be our business, but does it make him unavailable for Saturday, or does it make him available for Saturday? Mm-hmm. Lewis Miley, no chance. And we'll be lucky if we see him again this season, because the back injuries sustained playing for the England under 20s or whatever it was. He's having a scan to see if he'll play again this season. But the likelihood is that he won't. And that's horrendous coming because we need so many people. But isn't it ironic and perhaps typical of Newcastle that the only reason, well, that's not strictly true, but the main reason Lewis Miley has played all these first-team games for Newcastle is that Elliot Anderson got a back injury. because Elliot Anderson's only 21. He's a young boy, but he was going to be the star. He would have been playing all these games. He got a freak back injury, and all of a sudden, Lewis Miley's in the team regularly. Now what's happening? Lewis Miley's going out the team with a back injury, and it could well be that Elliot Anderson comes into the team because he isn't there because he's recovering from a back injury. It is ironic, and the injuries is just ludicrous, and I don't really want to go there. Because
well, it is, John, but I have never known any club to have so many long-term injuries in a single season. And if I were the manager, I would be wanting to know from the medical people,
I'm certain they're looking into that, Malcolm.
I'm sure they are, but the injuries persist, John. They keep coming.
Oh, sure. There'll be an internal investigation because they're thorough, and there's got to be, because it's one of two things, and I said this on last week's podcast, so I don't want to go over it too much, but it's either something wrong in training or something wrong medically, because it's happening too much. So there's got to be an internal investigation to see which of those two things, why they're putting too much stress on them with a high press, and can they do it and keep it up without the body being stretched beyond its limits, or are we getting it wrong medically? But there's something wrong somewhere, because it's going beyond nature.
I have never known such a stream of long injuries.
We must also stress, in the interest of fairness, I think, guys, that some of these injuries have been freakish and have got nothing to do with Newcastle playing a high-octane game or just being desperately unlucky. When you think of the height that Byrne fell from when he got his back injury and was out, I mean, that just happens. You think, Harvey Barnes has a toe injury I've never heard of. How freakish is that? He did it in about a minute and a half of a game. Yeah. A toe injury under the toe. I tell you what, I've seen more of Lord Lucan riding Shergar down Northumberland Street than I've seen of Harvey Barnes since he signed for Newcastle. It's been crazy. And what happened with Elliot Anderson? He was getting out of bed or something. Did somebody rugby tackle him or what? Was he getting out of bed with him when he had his back injury? I mean, there's been some real crazy, freakish ones as well. But the whole thing, I mean, you know, I hear of Lewis Miley getting injured away with England under 20s or something, and I hardly raise an eyebrow because it happens all the time. I hear Dubrovka coming back for personal reasons, having just let in the quickest goal in international football has ever seen in 6 seconds. And I say, well, you know, I would have been surprised if something like that hadn't happened, because it just happens this season. It's all crazy. It is absolutely crazy.
Okay, plenty to talk about.
John, I still claim the record.
What's that? For the quick goal.
For the quickest goal, in football.
I do want to talk about Anthony Gordon. How did you think he fared, Malcolm, in those two friendlies at the weekend? Brazil, of course, and then obviously
he was terrific.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that he didn't get the star man. In the newspapers that I was reading, I thought he was the outstanding player for England, and good for him. I think he's done his international career a power of good these last few days. Well done to him. Well done.
I think I'm like Malcolm. I think he was absolutely outstanding against Brazil. He worked forward, he worked back, which is what England needed, because they didn't have a quality left back in the game. They needed him to work back as well as forward. And I think he's put himself on the plane to the Euros.
For sure he has, John. For sure.
And I was so pleased for the boy.
He'd be one of the first names on the team sheet.
And I was so pleased for the boy because he's wanted it so much. I mean, he's wanted it so much, he's told the missus that you couldn't book the summer holidays for him because he didn't want to book for the Euros because he wanted to go to the Euros. Good for him, because I think he will go to the Euros now. And I tell you what, I was thrilled to bits for two reasons when I watched him against Brazil. I was thrilled to bits for him because he deserved it, and I was thrilled to bits that he wasn't injured because everybody else does get injured.
Sure.
Because he's by far and away, for me, our player of the season.
Yes. I think he's Newcastle's player of the season. And what I noticed in the international matches was particularly against Brazil, that the Brazilians were getting quite vexed when he got the ball, vexed with each other, and that they were having to go outside of their normal game to deal with him, you know. And when Brazilians find that they're having to alter their usually such brilliant game because of an opponent, that's something special.
Mind you, in Paqueta and Bruno, who are the best of pals, they've got two hammer throwers as well as wonderful footballers there, because they can dish it out all right, both those boys. That's why we're sweating every match on Bruno getting another booking and a two-match suspension. Because if things aren't quite right, he can lose his head and put the clog in, no danger. And I thought, as Malcolm said early on, I thought the West Ham boy could have been sent off against England.
He
got a booking early and could have been sent off. It'll be interesting to see the midfield on Saturday, Bruno v. Paqueta, because he will put the boot around as well as being he's one of these people that it can be a wonderful... He's got all the skills of a Brazilian, and he's got all the bite of Nobby Styles. So it's going to be interesting on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a wonderful situation, isn't it? International football that it can create one evening that they're playing against each other, and then on the weekend
they're playing with each other.
They're playing with each other, and then they're playing against each other.
Absolutely.
I want to see if it's a kicking match between them.
Well, if Bruno wants to kill him, then I don't mind.
if Bruno knows Paqueta better than any other person in the world,
absolutely.
As far as his,
I tell you what, we've always thought of Brazilians with silky skills, Malcolm, and they have got that. But just thinking aloud, we've talked about two boys there that can half play, but they can half put the clog in. And what we are missing is the third Brazilian who can put the clog in as well, and that's Joe Linton.
And that's Joe Linton.
He's a quality player whose physical presence is very important to us.
They are hard as nails. The Brazilians and Portuguese, they are absolutely hard as nails and ruthless with it.
There was nobody harder, Malcolm. There was nobody harder than Pelé, although he could play. He just got
absolutely.
Every time he was done, he just got up.
Yeah, he just got up. Yeah. And he didn't need to go around booting people at all.
No.
He relied on his skill to make it to find his space.
Okay, just want to go into one more topic before we get to where the Az. Lots of comments coming in and lots of pointers for potential talk. But Paul Watson, I already had this on my list. He says, Super Mac, can you tell us more about the campaign you've started for a statue with Joe Harvey? Gibbo, you carried this in your column in the Chronicle this week. Joe Harvey, a man who should never be forgotten at our club, won trophies as a player and as a manager. Joe Harvey should have a statue 100% successful as both player and manager, says C. Dan Smith. Tell us
and
about
coach.
This, lads.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So are you starting a campaign, lads? What's the situation? John, what was the substance of the article you wrote in the Chronicle?
Well, the original article before I did Malcolm's backup article was a result. I'm the president of the First Club, as you well know, Steve. You had things to do with the First Club in the past and hand over the plaque that's already there. And Mr. Darren Eales did a a throwaway line not so long ago asking Newcastle United fans if they thought there was anybody in Newcastle United's history that deserved perhaps, say, a statue. And as a consequence of that, the first club took up the cudgel on behalf of Joe and sort of said, is there anybody more worthy than Joe Harvey? And, you know, it's got to be said that while I adore Bobby Robson because I love him to death and because he's a Geordie and a great friend of mine, he actually won nothing for us and never played for us. Joe Harvey played for us, managed us, was a coach with us, was a chief scout with us, won two cup finals as a captain, coach in 55, won the European First Cup. There's nothing more that Joe could have done. And he deserves recognition, in my humble opinion, way before virtually everybody else. At the moment, we have three statues. I hold my hands up and say, well done, correct, on Shearer and Wojcicki, the two greatest goal scorers we've ever had. But surely Joe Harvey is the man that deserves to be with that. And yes, unashamedly, I will continue to beat the gong for Joe because I think it's deserved. And I think, and Malcolm made the point, and Malcolm, like me, loves Bobby Robson for several reasons, in Malcolm's case, because of what he did for him with Fulham. But at Newcastle, Bobby deserves everything he's got at Ipswich, etc., etc. But at Newcastle, you can't say Bobby Robson deserves a statue and Joe Harvey doesn't.
What's your thoughts on Mal?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, that I just find it somewhat bizarre that they put a statue up of Bobby Robson. But do you remember the ridiculous way in which he was sacked?
Yes, of course I do. Of course I do. Four games into a new season.
He could have seen the Champions League for a couple of seasons, but didn't win anything. Joe Harvey won the lot at Newcastle United as a player, as a coach, and as a manager. And nobody can better him on that. I just thought it was in bad taste that the club, when asked if they could put a plaque of Joe Harvey up, that the club said to the people wanting to do it, well, yeah, you can put it round opposite the Strawberry, and it's sort of like the bum end of the stadium, for heaven's sake. And I don't want to be rude to anybody in particular who watches the game from there, but the statue's around the other side. That's where I think he should be. Pride of place, in fact. Absolute pride of place.
The fact that he didn't get a statue first time around was simply down to finances. I mean, you know, like I say, the Fairs Club raised 5,000. We raised 5,000 with regards to, with regards to an event we did at the Fed. And, you know, the plaque was put up, but, you know, statue costs considerably more. And, I think the club may well look at it.
Steve, but for what Joe did for the club, I think that there should have been an awful lot more from the club itself.
Yeah. That's the point, Malcolm. Yes, the situation is that the Fairs Club and the people that supported the Fairs Club, like yourself, Steve, they couldn't afford a statue. That's why there wasn't a statue. But this is a new regime from then. We were talking, Ashley, we're now talking about the Saudis. The Saudis could put up a statue of any Newcastle player without looking to the first club to finance it, or they could put up a good proportion of the money that would bring it back in to come and play. And it was Newcastle United themselves floating the idea of, does anybody in our past really deserve some extra special acknowledgement? And the answer to that was yes. And the yes is Joe Harvey. Now, yes, there's cases can be made. If you go back far enough, you can make out a case for Colin Veitch. You can make out a case for Stan Seymour Sr., played in the 27 side that won the last championship, played in the 24 Cup final, was Mr. Newcastle United when they won the FA Cup, etc., etc. You can make cases out for but people wouldn't make cases for Kevin Keegan. But for Joe Harvey and it is the epitome of everything Newcastle United's about, and therefore he's the one for me. That's a personal situation, I think it is for Malcolm, and I think it is for a lot of fans too. They recognise Joe for what he was to us.
Absolutely, and I think that he should be post-war the number one. Pre-war should be the little Scotsman who's the top goal scorer for Newcastle United.
I don't think you're ever going to... The interesting thing, Malcolm, is you know, some of these boys... I mean, if you take the Edwardian side from 1900 to 1911, they won all the championships and played in six FA Cup finals. And, you know, Colin Veitch from that side, Bill McCracken from that side, Lawrence, who made the goalkeeper, who's made the most appearances ever for the club. But you're not going to get statues for them over 100 years ago. It's too late. It isn't going to happen. You're going to get backing for more recent people. Right. And I think Joe Harvey epitomises what Newcastle, the modern, to me, he's the granddad of the modern Newcastle United.
Okay, but you were mentioning the Arabs. How would the Arabs even know of him?
Sorry?
How would the Arabs even know of Joe Harvey?
Well, they will now, or they can have a look in the record books.
Well, yeah. Do you think they will, though?
Well, why did Darren Eales bring the subject up? I mean, why did Darren Eales bring the subject up? Who deserves it? Was he expecting it to be Chris Wood or somebody from their era? There's the one man voting for Chris Wood there. Actually, it's two men. I do believe Chris voted for himself as well. But there you go. But, I mean, you know, you can't have it too modern at the moment. You've got to have it. If this game is about winning things, and football is, then who do you look at beyond Joe Harvey?
That's right. Yes. Couldn't agree more.
Okay. Yeah. We are halfway through the show. It is time for the ads. A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Go to their website, skipsandbins.com. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com or telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Go to their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Email info at mrvickys.co.uk or telephone 01768 210102. Thanks to United Group Travel. Go to their website, unitedgrouptravel.com. Email info at unitedgrouptravel.com or phone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. They're a local company from Morpeth and there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Big thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, hit the subscribe button under the video. Click the thumb up to like the video and click share to share to your social media. If you want to help the channel financially, you can pay a one-off £25 fee. You get a cup, a scarf, a pen and a membership card and entry into the NUFC Matters monthly draw. Email john at nufcmatters.com for more details. Or if you've got a smartphone, scan the QR code now and it takes you straight to the membership pack. We also support the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk and you'll find the matchday bucket. You can make a donation virtually today. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify and other podcast providers. We also do events during the year. NUFC Matters Live will be at the O2 City Hall on Friday the 2nd of August for an evening with Rob Lee, One Night in Antwerp. Tickets start at £15 and you can get them from ticketmaster.co.uk. An evening with the entertainers takes place on Friday the 24th of January 2025 at the Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle. Telephone 0844 249 1000 or visit the website tynetheatreandoperahouse.uk to buy tickets today. You can also catch me on the Northeast Footy Breakfast Show live on Tune Radio weekdays 7 till 9 a.m. on DAB, smart speakers, and thetuneuk.com. And don't forget, we've got the end of season due. We're raising money for the Dementia Matters charity. Tickets are a tenner, and we've got Gibbo and Super Mac doing a talking. We've got Ask George. We've got the Long Sands playing as well. NUFCMatters.com and NewcastleLegends.com is where you can find tickets for that, priced at a tenner. And Gibbo and Peter Beardsley at the Irish Centre in June. Tickets for that are on Woucher, priced £19. And Malcolm, you've got an event as well you want to plug.
Yes, it's been organised at very short notice by Chris Cross, the most fabulous magician and a very funny man. And he's asked me to take part with him. And so we're having an evening with myself and Chris Cross. It's at the Gibside Hotel in Wickham. And tickets are £10 a head. And they are available from chris-cross.co.uk.
And he's not going to magic you out of a hat, Malcolm, is he? Like a rabbit, he's not going to bring you out of a hat or anything.
Oh yeah, I'm sure to disappear. Yeah, he can do what centre halves never did.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And don't forget, we've also got the NUFC Matter auction, which is, I've just put the link in the chat. We've got 18 or 19 of things up for grabs. So if you want to get on there, plenty of bargains to be had. Get yourself onto that link this afternoon or this evening. And it finishes tomorrow. Okay, we've got football again this weekend. Newcastle United back in Premiership action on Sunday. And, of course, on Tuesday night. Easter weekend often brings multiple fixtures. Two home games for Newcastle, which is nice, rather than away games to have to deal with at ridiculous times where people can't get there and back. First up, West Ham. Let's talk about that. 12:30 kickoff on TNT Sports. Team news, a bit early, obviously, to find out what we need to know about the likes of Livramento and Kieran Trippier. But we do know Tonali is out. Nick Pope, Callum Wilson, Joe Linton, Sven Botman, all definitely out. We're hoping for better news, maybe on Harvey Barnes, Kieran Trippier and Tino. Lewis Miley, again, question marks over how long he could be out. And no news on what's happening with Martin Dubravka. Was it a personal issue or was it another injury? Also, Bruno coming back with a thigh strain. One would imagine he will be okay. But Eddie Howe's press conference, he's going to get hit with quite a few questions about player availability tomorrow. If Bruno does make it, of course, he is still walking the tightrope of Premier League suspension. He's still currently on 9 bookings. One more will see him banned. Anthony Gordon, 2 more bookings will see him suffer the same fate. The cut-off point to avoid a ban, of course, is 32 games, so not long to go now. The lads have done very well. West Ham United, well, early team news coming out of there. Edson Alvarez is suspended. Maxwell Cornier and Mohamed Kudus are both doubtful at the moment. The Hammers come to St James's Park in unbeaten in their last 4 Premier League games, but winless in 2, having drawn with both Aston Villa and Burnley at the London Stadium. On the road this season, David Moyes' team have guided, he's guided his side to 6 wins, 2 draws and 6 defeats. They've only had 1 clean sheet during those games, and that was at Arsenal. Tells you a little bit about how they tend to play when they're away from home. But yeah, 12:30 kickoff, awful kickoff time that. So it means that Gibbo and Ando will be in the Irish Centre after the game, probably about half an hour after the game, if you want to come along and see them. Free entry into the Irish Centre. Kids are welcome. Referees, Robert Jones. This is his 4th game looking after a Newcastle fixture. And he took charge of the 1-0 defeat at Manchester City at the start of the season. And the 1-0 home win over Manchester United and the 3-0 cup win over Manchester United at Old Trafford. And on VAR, it is David Coote. So, John, first up, West Ham at home. This, for me, is a must-win game. I think if we don't win this game, Newcastle can kiss goodbye to any narrow hopes that they've got of getting European place, especially with the way the other fixtures fall over the course of the weekend period. Newcastle need to win this game for me, John.
That's absolutely right. And for me, they also need to win against Everton on Tuesday night. If we don't get 6 points out of those 2 games, we can forget about Europe, because we're playing catch up anyway. We've got no more wiggle room. There's only 10 games to play. These two are at home. I mean, let's look at it this way. West Ham. We win against West Ham. We're 1 point. West Ham are seventh. We're 1 point behind them with a game in hand. We lose. We're 7 points behind them. So this, first of all, we have to get over the first hurdle to have any chance in Europe. And the first hurdle is we beat West Ham. Having done that, we've got to get over the second hurdle, which is we beat Everton. If we do those two things, we're set up for the other games, which are quite decent, good run in, we're set up. If we don't get, for me, you know, if we get 4 points, it's not good enough. We're not going to make Europe because we've got to get six. We must get six. And the concern, I believe we can do it because the opposition aren't fearsome. West Ham and Everton at home. If you're going to be in Europe next year, you've got to be able to beat West Ham and Everton at home. But equally, what worries me is that you've got to beat Nottingham Forest at home, Luton at home, and Bournemouth at home, and we didn't beat any of them. So that is my concern. But the time for excuses is gone. The time for bad luck with injuries, the time for VARs to blame, the time for we're all exhausted and we're tired, and all that's gone. This is a sprint now, not a marathon, a sprint. 10 games, end of season, finished. Do or die, now or never.
And yeah, absolutely.
Be up for it or we're not.
Yeah. And at least we'll get something out of this season. It's been a very, very frustrating time. And not just for us spectators, but it must have been frustrating within the dressing room, particularly with all the injuries that have been suffered. My word, disappointing for the players who have faced long layoffs. You know, no footballer wants to be off, not for a single match. You know, to miss months at a time It really is hard to bear for footballers, and so let's at least get some little something out of this season, and that is get a European place. It means overtaking West Ham. That's the first thing that's got to be done. It can't be done by playing them, but it can be done over the two home games. And if that happens, then we've got a chance. Then we're looking back on people. You know, when you think we've only got 10 games to go this season, that's all, just 10 games. And then you can all relax and go on your holes. Well, except for Gordon. Who I'm sure will be called up by
Absolutely. For me, this trip to Malky Dubai, trip to Dubai for the ones that were, the ones that were on national duty, they are training and playing the whole time. The rest went to Dubai. And for me, you've got to keep the fitness levels up by having them ticking over in training, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, the most important thing in Dubai was team bonding, was getting them together, rediscovering that one for all and all for one feeling, the siege feeling, if you like, us against the world, discovering, getting rid of the self-doubt. Because I've looked at Newcastle United recently, and the biggest problem isn't a lack of team spirit, because I don't think the boys are like that. But what it is that you can see self-doubt in the minds of individual players that doubt themselves and they doubt the team just a little bit, the capability of getting results. And that self-doubt spreads like a cancer if it's allowed to. What Eddie had to do out there, and he's a very shrewd boy, and I'm certain he did do it, was rid the mind of all negative thoughts.
Negative, yeah.
Rid the mind of excuses. just bond, show them all what they did, have one-on-one meetings, sit Joe Willock down and tell him what he did great last season, sit Isaac down and say, you've got 16 goals, you can get up to 20, you're a great player, yeah, this, because he was just being that little bit short as well. You just sit these, well, he didn't have Isaac in Dubai, of course, because he was away with Sweden. But now they're back, he can do that with Isaac. But he can sit down Longstaff and he could sit down so many different players and say, come on, you are good. Your quality, that's why we brought you to this club. Get rid of the self-doubt. But trust yourself and trust the bloke that's at your elbow, that's playing alongside you. Get that trust back, because I've looked at Newcastle, and I don't know about you two guys, but what I've seen is individuals riddled with self-doubt in recent games.
Yes, riddled with self-doubt, John, I agree. And also one or two carrying injuries.
Yes, of course they have. They've come back too soon, but they haven't had an option. And that produces self-doubt. That produces self-doubt.
But hopefully, this period of time since the last match has allowed those injuries to heal and the guys to get themselves fit. And no better place than Dubai, I think, to do that. My word.
I mean, the point is that often, you know, a hour before kickoff, we get the team sheet. And often I've looked at recent games, I've looked at the team sheet and I've thought, hey, that's okay. That team's quite good. That team, I fancy that team, etc. But you know what? It's the team sheet is flattered to deceive, because some of the names on it, like Longstaff, like Willock, like Isaac, like Bockman before the injury, the names are on, and we remember how good they were last season, but they weren't playing to that level this season because they were carrying injuries, and then doubts come in. And so the names give a false impression that we had a good team out there, but it wasn't the real Bockman that was playing. It wasn't the real Isaac that was playing. It wasn't the real Willock that was playing. It was an 80% Willock. Well, an 80%, the 20% missing is hugely important. And that has been the problem.
Yeah, just on the Bockman situation, John, that it was his decision not to have an operation and to continue playing. And I think, what were you thinking, lad? What were you thinking? You know, you're going to make the injury worse, not better, when you're playing. So I really don't understand that. I don't know why the club didn't make the decision and saying you're going under the knife.
I mean, you see, just taking on the point I was making about how pleased we are to see certain people back, etc. My first indication for Saturday is that I will start Elliot Anderson and give Longstaff the rest he's wanted for weeks.
I think he's been carrying an injury similar to... Totally.
But having said what I've just said, we don't know. I'm saying that, remembering the Elliot Anderson I've been watching at the end of last season and the beginning of this season. But the one that played on Saturday might be a pale imitation of that, because he might be nowhere near ready enough to be able to do it and live up to his reputation. So you don't know. And only Eddie sees him on the training ground and knows how ready he is to start again. But I tell you, the one thing I do know, Malcolm, is that Sean Longstaff is ready for a rest.
Yes, yeah. But these people who have been out with long-term injuries, it takes a hell of a long time to build your fitness up to a level that will see you through 90 minutes of Premiership football.
Yeah, well, Isaac's been talked. Isaac, you see, you've had Eddie admitting after the last game that Longstaff's been playing with injections to kill the pain, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. Isaac, when he was out in Sweden, was talking about the difficulty he's suffered this season, where he's had an injury, come back, without saying to help the team, come back a bit quick, had another injury straight away and gone out. and he's never reached a level that he is at his very best with. And when he's at his best, he's explosive. He is terrific. He's got 16 goals. He can get 20 goals this season. He's only got to get another four. And we haven't had a bloke score 20 goals in the season since Shearer exactly 20 years ago.
But he's still not
quite the bloke that he was.
Absolutely. But I think, though, that Newcastle, they have a very small squad for what they're looking to achieve. And you get a few injuries, and by heavens, you really are stretched tight then. And Newcastle have the financial wherewithal not to have that kind of a problem, to be able to spend, bring players in, but they are totally restricted by this FFP. And this FFP, the way it works at the moment, is preventing Premiership football clubs from doing their job properly. And I think that must be a great concern. I think the top six clubs, they're quite happy with it. They're more than happy, because FFP is a very recent thing into the game. They had their squads all set up, big squads. Look at Man City, look at Liverpool, look at Arsenal. But the new boys that are suddenly coming into it, Aston Villa, Newcastle United, West Ham possibly, and they haven't got that kind of the kind of numbers that are required. You look at Manchester City, they can put out two pretty even Premier League sides. Two. Newcastle are struggling to put out one. And a lot of it is to do with down to FFP, because Newcastle not being allowed to do their job properly when suffering injuries like they have done. And I think it's got to be looked at very carefully, and a lot of changes made to it. It suits the top six. Oh, by heavens, it suits them. But it's not allowing the Aston Villas and the Newcastle Uniteds to get up to the kind of strength that will seriously take on that top six.
Okay, we've got Everton on Tuesday night as well. So let's get predictions from you guys on both games, West Ham and then Everton. John, you first.
Yep, we'll win both games. I can't contemplate anything else. It's easy to contemplate anything else. But if we don't, our season's finished with 8 games to go. And I just can't contemplate that. If you, and I will reiterate what I said earlier in this podcast, if you're going to play in Europe, you beat West Ham and Everton at home.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't deserve to play in Europe. You don't deserve to play in Europe. And West Ham are above us, but they're not a class above us. They're just above us in the table. They're not a class above us. They've got good players, Paqueta, Barron, Ward-Prowse. But every side has got some good players. They will be sitting tonight and saying, oh, we've got to be careful in Newcastle. Their form hasn't been good, but they've got Bruno, they've got Gordon, they've got Isak. They'll be naming players that they're scared of, and we can name players in their side that we're scared of. Bottom line is, this side is beatable. West Ham is beatable. First things first, we've got to beat West Ham. After we've done that, we've got to beat Everton. And both are possible. And I've got to believe they are. I can't carry on believing that we're going to have to get late goals to get a point like we did against Luton and like we did against Bournemouth. I've got to think differently to that. Otherwise, we stack our hand. And I've got to think that the bonding that's gone on in Dubai, the rest some players have got, the positivity that is in their heads now because Eddie has spent every day doing that out there and with the rest of the international players as they've come back sort of today in the training and tomorrow, we've got to cling to the hope that this is our last chance, but we're capable of taking it. And I don't want to hear any words that let the fans win it for us. because, and that is true, and the fans are with them. But the fans, it's, let the players win it for us. You've got to give the fans some encouragement to back the players as well. They're down. They want, if Newcastle start on the front foot against West Ham and go at the game and go at it at pace and close down, and that, the crowd will get behind them straight off and will roll them on to victory. If we start tippy-tapping it about midfield, it's slow, and they just are allowed to get two banks of four, etc., etc., it's a slog. It's up to us to do the job. It's only a sprint now. It's not a marathon. We can see the winning post, so the players haven't got to keep going for week upon week and month upon month. It's short sprint into the end of the season. Let's keep it alive by getting the two wins that we need at home. And I don't think it's going to be easy. It might be like 2-1 against West Ham, and it might be 1-0 or whatever against Everton. But it doesn't matter what the score is, as long as we have one more goal than them.
That's right. Yes. 3 points from both of those two games. And that sets us right up, really in with a chance. And if that doesn't drive the team on, then nothing will. And I see us winning both games. And I shall be annoyed if we even concede in those two games. I really will. And I think the pace of Gordon and Isak is way too much for West Ham, that's for sure. So, yeah, I'm going two wins. I'm going to go 2-0 against West Ham, and I'm going to go 1-0 against Everton.
John, have you got a score prediction?
2-1 against West Ham. And yeah. I don't care about Everton as long as we have one more goal than them. But it could be exactly the same score again. I keep giving one to the opposition because I have an awful job visualising Newcastle keeping a clean sheet. I know we did it against Wolves at home, but both their top scorers and their best player, both the top scorers were out and their best player Neto was off by half time, which all helped the clean sheet. But I would love a clean sheet. But 2-1 wouldn't upset me. I won't say, oh, we'll let a goal in. Isn't that awful? No, I'll take 2-1 twice.
Okay, I'm going to go for a 1-1 against West Ham, and I'm going to go a 2-1 win against Everton. I think 4 points is what we'll get over the weekend. So I'm not as positive as you two guys. I think a lot depends on the teams that we'll put out. Though, if we can put out a good strong team and maybe get something out of Lewis Hall. You know, the guy sat on the bench all season. He looks good when he gets on. Maybe he's give Lewis Hall a chance if we are still struggling.
Who's that again? Who's he again?
Lewis Hall, exactly. Well,
him and Harvey Barnes have become the equivalent of Shergar and Road Lucan, haven't they?
They have, yeah.
Never see you.
Lads, been a pleasure as always. It'll be a pre-recorded show next week, but we will be still showing that on Thursday. Look forward to seeing you then. Have a good Easter, lads. Take care.
Indeed.
All the best.
Have a good weekend, everybody. Enjoy your football.
Keep the faith.